Bloomberg Law with June Grosso and Michael Best. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Manhattan U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara was back as the Sheriff of Wall Street at a press conference announcing high-profile insider trading charges for the first time in years. He described a brazen scheme involving corporate intrigue, gambling debts, and secret codes. A six-year insider trading plot where the former chairman of Dean Foods, Tom Davis, gave illegal stock tips to well-known Las Vegas gambler Billy Walters.
When the board member of a Fortune 500 company feeds inside information to a professional gambler who makes a killing on well-timed trades in that very company's stock, that is a form of corruption, corruption of our markets. And we don't let corruption stand.
Golf star Phil Mickelson made close to $1 million from a trade on a stock tip from Walters. The SEC named Mickelson as a relief defendant in a civil complaint, and the golfer has agreed to repay the money with interest. The SEC's Andrew Ceresni was barraged with questions from reporters about why Mickelson was not criminally charged.
So in this case, we've charged that Mr. Mickelson made profits as a result of the illegal conduct of Mr. Walters, and thereby should have to disgorge or give back that money and not maintain it. It's really an equitable principle.
Mickelson's lawyer, Gregory Craig, said Phil was an innocent bystander to alleged wrongdoing by others that he was unaware of. Michael?
Our guests today are James Cox, a professor of law at Duke University School of Law, and Anthony Sabino, a founding partner at Sabino & Sabino. Welcome to both of you. We're very happy to have you on the program today.
Thank you very much.
James, why don't you take us through the allegations in the criminal case here so that we can sort of understand how it is we get to this complicated set of charges and complaints?
Well, they are complicated, but the story is pretty clear that we have Mr. Davis, who's in a privileged position being on the board of Dean Foods, and he is... He's a person of questionable background. He was not a very good gambler, and as a result of not being a very good gambler, he lost a lot of money. And in order to cover his gambling debts, apparently the allegations are he embezzled money from a fund. I'm not quite sure what his relationship was. Fund that was for abused, battered women in the Las Vegas area. And he used that to pay off some of his gambling debts, making himself further in the hole. That he could, now he's an embezzler as well as later on an inside trading. And he's had this relationship with a fellow gambler, Mr. Walters, that allows him to then get a loan from Walter that he uses then Davis, to purchase Dean stock on knowledge that he has and is not public knowledge, that Dean Foods is going to go through, have some very good information, earnings upbeat. And he shares that information with Walter. They're sharing this information on a purchased cell phone, which they use codes. For example, Dean Foods, I think the code name they used was something like Dallas Cowboys. And so they're speaking in tongues, and passing on information. So Davis makes a fair amount of money. Walters makes a killing on the information he's getting. Turns out that money is owed by golfer Mickelson to Walters, and Walters passes on some information to him, also through Davis. And so Mickelson is able to make almost $1 million, a little over $900,000 by some modest trading compared to what Walters did and what Davis did. And use that money to pay off some of his gambling debts.
Anthony, when you look at this case, it seems, and you know that you already have the Tom Davis pleading and cooperating with authorities, is it an open and shut insider trading case, the case against Billy Walters?
Well, certainly Walters' defense counsel doesn't think so, because from what I've seen in the reporting, he said that a very vigorous defense will be launched to demonstrate that Mr. Walters is not guilty whatsoever. But that would, of course, be the expected comments. I don't think there's anything that's open and shut these days in the realm of insider trading, but it is a rather strong case because you do have Davis, who is without a doubt a true insider at Dean Foons, or at least he was before he lost his position given these events. Davis is saying, yes, I passed along this information. I intended Mr. Walters to get it. One of the intriguing things, in addition to everything that James just said, is the fact that I believe also Walters arranged a loan to Davis to pay off some of Davis's individual debts. And again, as Professor Cox was kind enough to point out, the insidious nature of these, or the insidious nature of the allegation that they used burner cell phones and they spoke in code, obviously that is indicia to any jury that, yeah, there was the requisite mental intent. These guys knew they were doing illegal stuff.
Because of the Newman decision. But I'm not going to make a comment about how that might have affected the charges here.
Reporters did not get any further with the SEC's Andrew Ceresni.
We bring charges based upon the evidence and the law, and what we can justify based on the evidence and the law. And in this case, the charges that we have brought are relief defendant charges against Mr. Mickelson.
We've been talking with Professor James Cox of Duke Law School and Anthony Sabino, a founding partner of Sabino and Sabino. Jim, reporters kept asking, and there were no answers about this specific case, but is there a good chance that the Newman decision is the reason that Mickelson wasn't charged with the inside trading?
You know, it's possible that Mickelson was unaware of the source of the tip. And it's equally more likely that he was unaware that what kind of benefits that Mr. Walter had been making to Mr. Davis for the tips. And if you look at that Second Circuit jurisprudence that came out of Newman and actually shaped Newman, those are concerns here, particularly the concern about what Mickelson knew about the relationship that would have produced some pecuniary benefits from Walter to Davis. So that's a possibility. I've just been reading this as the fact that Mickelson, something of an icon and concern about public reaction, if there had been a prosecution of him. That's how I've been reading it. But again, it's hard to read the tea leaves accurately here.
Anthony, the prosecutor certainly did not sound happy about the effect that the Newman decision has had. Could you take us through what the Second Circuit did in Newman and how big a deal it really is?
Yes. Newman is a big deal, at least for today. But Preet Bharara and many others in the Justice Department are looking forward to the day that they hope the Supreme Court takes review of a similar case and overturns it. And there were those among us, and myself included, that while I certainly don't dismiss Newman out of hand, I do have serious misgivings about it. What has to be remembered is that in Newman, the Second Circuit made a very big deal about the fact that the investment bankers whose convictions were dismissed were several levels removed, and I'm quoting the court right here, from the fellow who gave the tip. And in fact, they went so far as to quantify that and say they were precisely four steps removed. In this particular case, arguably with Phil Mickelson, he is arguably one step removed from the tipper. But I think the problem with Newman is it adds a gloss, if you will, an additional requirement that now the government has to prove that the tippee, in this case it would have been Mickelson, knew that there was a benefit to tipper, and that is Davis, the corporate CEO, and that Davis, as the CEO, actually received a benefit. And from everything I've read to date, indicates that these fellows probably never met or had very minimal contact, so Mickelson would not have that knowledge, and therefore there wouldn't be that big of a situation. There would not be a very good chance for success. I also have to agree with Jim that, you know, Mickelson's a very well-known figure, very well-liked. While I am a left-handed golfer myself and therefore a big fan, the bottom line is I'm not going to apologize for Mickelson's behavior because this tarnishes his image. It reveals he gambles a lot. He was willing to do something that he probably thought was maybe sketchy. But the bottom line is he has an otherwise fairly well-known public reputation, and you have to convince a jury of 12 men and women that there was actually that requisite mental intent, that Phil knew exactly what he was doing, and he knew it was against the law, and so on and so forth. So I think that Bharara essentially punted here because he felt the chances were not that good, whereas, as June asked me before, it's closer to a slam dunk for Mr. Walters, unfortunately for him. But I think that Baraha, as the lead guy for the Justice Department on these insider trading cases coming out of New York's Southern District, they're waiting for the right case because they want to get this. They're dying to get this from the Supreme Court. And it's regrettable that the countervailing case called Salmon, which is another set of facts which very much upheld the more traditional view of insider trading and convicted that fellow, Mr. Salmon, because of the intimate family relationship between Tipper and Tippy and the clear benefits that flew back and forth. They're waiting for a chance to posit these conflicting circuit opinions before the court and get something that restores the balance back, or I should say, swings the pendulum back towards the government side as far as insider traders.
I should say that in the press conference, when the reporters asked whether Mickelson's celebrity status had anything to do with it, both the U.S. attorney and the SEC enforcement head bristled at that suggestion. Jim, what is the real basis that they're asking for Mickelson to disgorge $1 million? Is it a legal theory? They say he didn't violate any of the SEC rules.
Well, the only way they could ever get that back from him, if they compelled it, was a show of violation. And this is something of a kabuki dance, as far as I can see. I mean, it's a play on word. I mean, I'm interested in what Anthony thinks about this. But the SEC say, well, we never charged him, but they did file a complaint. I mean, they filed an action against him, and then they drafted one and got money out of him. But there was a document that was prepared by the SEC, opened up a case, and they got a settlement, and then they reached the conclusion that they were not going to proceed further with it. So, to me, you can't require somebody to give back money unless there's a violation, and certainly Mickelson found it's in his interest to give up $923,000, not out of good nature and not to help the government, but to avoid adverse publicity in this matter, and which is, to me makes it look as though there was a violation and the government's just decided that rather than push the thing, they'll take what they can get. And Mickelson found out that they would settle the case to avoid any further adverse publicity. So
Anthony,
I think each side got out of it what they wanted it.
Anthony, what is a relief defendant?
I'm sorry?
What is a relief defendant?
A relief defendant is something we rarely see in these instances. A relief defendant is a couple of steps removed from an unindicted co-conspirator. It's basically someone who the government alleges has done wrong, but the government doesn't want to jail that person. They simply want relief. And again, that's consistent with the situation here and picking up where Jim left off. I think he's right, and I concur in this way, is that we don't know the lead-up to the government's end result here, but I think, frankly, the government went to Mickelson and said, look, we have the ability to put you in jail. At the very least, we will put you through a very messy criminal prosecution. You may very well be acquitted, but do you really want that, given your standing in the community and so on and so forth? Do you want to endanger a lifetime as known as a leading sports figure and a well-liked individual? And Mickelson said, well, my choices. Well, give back the money plus interest. And he said, fine, I'll write you the check. And God bless him, he has the ability to do so. So it was intelligently played, I think, by both sides, because Mickelson is able to avoid the glare of adverse publicity. He doesn't miss time from the pro tour. He pays money that he can go back and make because he's still more or less in his prime. And the government, likewise, gets the money back, which, again, in so many instances in white-collar crime, that's really what the government wants. But far more important is this. Proving someone guilty of a crime beyond a reasonable doubt in front of a jury, that's a big uphill battle. All right, convincing a jury that someone might be guilty or persuading the defendant, well, we have just enough, that preponderance of the evidence, that 51% that shows you're guilty of a civil violation. Why don't you just give us back the money? Fine, they write the check.
We have to leave it at the writing of the check. And I know you know a lot about golf there. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on Bloomberg Law. That's Anthony Sabino of Sabino & Sabino and Professor James Cox of Duke Law.
You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekday afternoons at 4:30 p.m. Eastern. in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, in San Francisco on 960 AM and 103.7 FM HD2, and Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119.